Parshat Bo. So I want to tell you a story. When we were in Tzamap, we were in the third stage of basic training. First stage is like infantry training. Second stage is tank school. You learn how to sort of work a tank, drive a tank, whatever. And third stage is what's called Tzevet Machlaka Pluga, where you learn how to function as a tank crew, as a tank crew in the context of a platoon, and as a tank crew in the context of a company. And that involves a very, very difficult 3-4 months. All week you're in shetach. You most of the time sleep in your tank. You get very little sleep at night. You know, some days you're working on driving in my case, I was a driver, mountainous terrain. Sometimes it's, short terrain. Sometimes it's learning how to take a Syrian pita, whatever these things are, right? And sometimes they just surprise you with all sorts of fun things to do. So this particular time, it was Thursday night, and we weren't getting out for Shabbos. They lined us up in two rows, which means we're going on a masa. And we start this masa. You know, the way they did it was, you don't know where you're going. You don't know how long you're going for. That's part of the torture. And that's reality. Like, when you're in a war, you don't always know how long you're, like, especially if you're a soldier. And you got to run. And at one point, they start yelling, okay, alam kop tuchot, everybody open up your stretchers. Now, there were two guys who carried a stretcher, right? We were like a machlaka, whatever, 30 guys. And these two stretchers, you have to put two big guys. They always pick the biggest guys, right? They put them on the stretchers, right? And we had to run with these stretchers. And there's a whole sheet that had to do this. You know, the first time you're doing this, you're in agony because you don't know that, you got to get someone to switch you all the time. Once you get a little more polished, right? By this time, we're more polished. We've been in the army already 6 months. So we know we have these little sponges, pieces of sfog, have in your pocket. You pull it out, put it under your shirt so it doesn't dig into your thing, right? You're running with it, right? You go for like a minute or two and you go, psst, somebody jumps in. So nobody's carrying for a long time, so it's doable, right? And at one point, psst, and the next guy's turn comes, and this was a new guy in the unit. He had come from, and I didn't know much about him. I hadn't had a chance to talk to him yet. He was a short, squat guy, right? Gingy, right? Broad, but short, little stubby legs. And when we were on the masa, I noticed that for every one, and I'm not a big guy, but for every one step of mine, he almost had to take two steps. Shorter guys have a much tougher time in the army. They have advantages, but on a masa, they have a disadvantage, right? And I thought about it, like, I felt bad for him. Like, it's harder. You know, a guy who's really tall, no, don't go out, just turn it off. Avner, come back, turn it off, and sit down. Thank you. All right? Now you're famous. All right? So, see why it's good to sit up front? Right? And sometimes, right, like, it's much harder for him. So I do the psst. And he's the guy who steps in. And I'm like a couple guys back. I'm like almost next in line to take the stretcher. And I realize this is going to be a problem. And this was a really hard masa. We've been going already 10, 15 kilometers. You're sweating. You're dying. It's the middle of the night. You don't know how long it's going to be. It was just so hard to keep going. And you're trying to motivate yourself, but it's like step after step and whatever, kilometer after kilometer. It's like breaking you. And sometimes you think, like, how am I going to do this, right? And so we're, running in the night with these stretchers in the middle of some godforsaken place in the mountains, whatever. And he gets under the stretcher. And I think to myself, like, how is this guy going to manage? Like, first of all, he has to do twice as, he's like the roadrunner, he's got to go twice as fast as everybody else. And second of all, he's very short. So the stretcher's going to lean. So either he's going to put it on his shoulder and the guy could fall off. That's not good. Right? It's more weight on him. Or he's going to have to hold it. It's very difficult. So I kind of made to myself, like I said, okay, you know what? I'm only going to give him a minute. I'm going to switch him because it's hard. And then I saw the most incredible thing. He must have realized this. Right? Okay? And the other guy, who's a little taller than him, who's even a little taller than me, is trying to lower it, whatever it is. Right? He gets under the stretcher, pushes the other guy out of the way, grabs the other out of the stretcher, puts both of them on his shoulders, and starts to jog. I never saw anything like that in my life. I never saw anything like that. Okay? That's how broad he was. He has both of the stretcher lines. The whole front of the stretcher is on his thing. He's got the thing on his shoulder, and he's just jogging. Right? And I thought, wow, that's a creative solution, but that's crazy. You're carrying twice the weight. And so I wait a minute, and then I try to switch him, right? And he elbows me out of the way. And I tried it a couple times, and he just kept running. kilometer after kilometer after kilometer. I think he ran 10 kilometers with the stretcher on his shoulders. I never saw anything like it. The most amazing thing about this was, it wasn't just me. Everybody started to see this. It completely changed the Masa. Completely changed the Masa. Because right before this happened, I was near breaking point. I mean, one of the things you learn in the army is, however far you can push yourself, you can always push yourself further. But then it became something different. I didn't have to push myself. He was like pulling. We were so inspired watching him. How could you not run when a guy is running with a whole stretcher on himself? Now, I later found out that he had come from Commando Gami, which is one of the top elite units in the army. He had fallen out because of some medical issue about being underwater. So he was an ox, right? So for him, a 10 kilometers running with a stretcher was nothing. But I didn't know that at the time. Completely changed. There was a moment in that Masa where everything turned around. Now, why do I tell you this? Because I want to share with you an unbelievable idea. Unbelievable idea. Okay? So, Kadosh Baruch Hu says, one more makkah. One more. We had seven makkot in Parshat Vayera. Now we got the last three. Why there's six, seven there, and three here is a whole other discussion. Some of us had that discussion in Poland, but whatever. And now we get to number 10. We're almost there. We're going to get out. And Hashem says, I'm going to come in the middle of the night. In the middle of the night. I'm going to come. And Medrash says, right? Ani be'atzmi. Right? Kechatzot ha'layla, ani yotzei b'toch Mitzrayim. Hashem himself is coming. This is going to be a different level. Hashem is going to come at midnight. And in fact, when you look at the Makkah, that's exactly what happens. Vayhi b'chatzi ha'layla. Anybody recognize those words? Okay? This year, when you get to that song in the Haggadah, remember this moment. It'll change the way you sing that song. Vayhi b'chatzi ha'layla. B'chatzi ha'layla. Exactly at midnight. Now, why do I say exactly at midnight? Because there is a fascinating Rashi. Vayomer Moshe, ko amar Hashem, kachatzot ha'layla niyotzei b'toch Mitzrayim. I'm going to come around midnight. That's a strange thing for Moshe Rabbeinu to say. I'll be there around midnight. What do you mean around midnight? Hashem doesn't come around midnight. Hashem comes at midnight. Why does it say around midnight? So I'm sure some of you recognize this Rashi. Rashi quotes the Medrash, says like this. Right? Kechatzot, kmo kealot, right? Shamar Moshe kechatzot. Why does Moshe say around midnight? Demashma, by the way, this is in Perek Yud Aleph Pasuk Tet, if you want to look it up. Chapter 11, verse 2. Right? Shamar Moshe kechatzot demashma samuchlo. Olufanav olacharav. It's around midnight. A little before, a little after. Okay. Velo amar bichatzot. It doesn't say at midnight. Shema yitu itstanginei paro. Because the astrologers of Paro might make a mistake. Hashem says, Moshe says, I'm going to come at midnight. And let's say that their watch is off, and it's 12 and 30 seconds. Hello? Hashem isn't coming. V'yomru, Moshe Badayu. They can say, oh, this guy's a joker. He's not serious. He said Hashem's coming midnight. He's not here yet. But Hashem, who knows that midnight is midnight, Hashem is the only one who can come exactly at midnight. He says midnight. That's what Rashi says. And the Siftei Chachamim perish on Rashi. V'kadosh Baruch Hu amar Moshe bechatzot alayla shehu mashma beemtza alayla mamash ela shemoshe shina v'amar kechatzot. Right? Rashi says Moshe changed what Hashem says because the astrologers might get it wrong. Now I want you to think about this for a minute. Think about this for a minute. The river turned to blood. Frogs are exploding all over the country. Hail is coming down. Fire and water mixed together. Wild animals are killing everything. Locusts come out. I mean, darkness that holds you in your seat. Unbelievable. It's 12:01. There is Moshe. Ah! That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. They're going to say he's a joker? Are you nuts? What's going on here? A letter in the Torah is not stam. Moshe Rabbeinu changes something that God said. What's going on here? And what is Rashi talking about? So I'm going to share with you an unbelievable idea. Unbelievable idea. Which so fits this evening. First daf of Brachos. I'm going to share with you a perush of Rav Kook on the first daf of Brachos. It doesn't get much holier than that. Now, the first daf of Brachos is the first Masecht in the Gemara. So if Ravina Nirvashi, who edited and put together Talmud Bavli, put something on the in the first Masechta, that means it's important. If it's on the first daf, it's one of the basic ideas of Judaism. So this is an important idea. And we all know, the Gemara says like this, right? Find it. Meimatai Koren Shema Be'arvin, right? From when do we read Shema at night, right? Misha Shekoren Nechasim Lechol B'Trumatan. From the time the Kohanim come to eat Truma. So you have a Kohen, and he's tummy, he's impure. I don't know, he picked up a lizard. Lizard is a sheretz, right? Cockroach, whatever he's tummy. Can't eat his Truma. Right? Maybe he had a seminal emission. He's impure, right? Potential life lost, death, contact with death. He's impure. Okay. So what does he have to do? Well, first thing he's got to do is he's got to go to the mikvah. He has to see that he's clean now. He has to, you can't jump into the mikvah with a sheretz in your hand. Right? If he's still having seminal emissions, he can't go to the mikvah. But he realizes he's clean, so he jumps into the mikvah. Okay, he's in the mikvah. He comes out of the mikvah. He's pure, right? Pure? Nope, not pure yet. Right? You have to wait. The pasuk says, v'ha'arev shemesh, when the sun goes down, when it becomes night. Right? V'taher. And then he's pure. But he's not really pure yet. Right? If he's pure, he can go to the Beis HaMikdash. Is he allowed to go to the Beis HaMikdash? Anybody know? Can he do the avoda? No. What does he have to do still? He has to bring a korban. A korban in the Gemara and Divrei Chazal is called kapara. He has to atone for whatever mistake, whatever this symbolizes. So there's three stages. He's got to go to a mikvah, the sun has to set, and he's got to get kapara. That's an interesting question, why you need all the stages. Short version, jumping in the mikvah is what we do. Sunset is what a Kadosh Baruch Hu does. Becoming pure, putting yourself on the right path is a combination. I got to do my bit, but I have to trust Hashem will do His. Not just because you do all the right things, you're dieting, doesn't mean you're going to lose weight. Hashem has to decide if you're going to lose weight. But, you know, if you eat four burgers every night at midnight, it doesn't matter how much amuna you have. Hashem says you got to do your bit. Okay. But just because you have no burgers and you're eating wheat crackers, doesn't mean you lose weight. Okay. You got to charge up the hill. Hashem still is going to say, okay, fine. But there's an interesting question here. Right? The Gemara says, right? Michdei kohanim emas ka'achli b'truma mishas tetsa kochavim. When do kohanim come to eat their truma? When it gets dark, the end of the process of ha'arev shemesh is when the stars come out. So if we know that a kohen eats his truma when the stars come out, why does it say that you eat the truma, right? Sorry, so if we know that you can say shema therefore, right? When the kohen eats his truma, and we know that the kohen can come eat his truma when the stars come out, what would it make more sense to say? You can say shema when the stars come out. So the Gemara has its own lima. What's going on here? Why is it important to know that a kohen can eat his truma, either he's pure or he's impure? He's obviously impure. He hasn't brought a carbon. He can't come into the base of Mikdash. But then again, he's pure because he's eating chuma. What's going on here? Listen to this, Rav Kook. Ah! This is as good as chuma. This is unbelievable. Okay? By the way, this is the perush when some of us have been learning, you know, sort of the Olat HaRiyah and Tefillah. And I told you of Tzvi Yehuda collected pieces from the commentary of Rav Kook on Talmud. That's the Ein Hayah. And I don't believe the Ein Hayah has been translated into English. It's an unbelievable commentary. And here's an example. Okay? Vihine, right? Hayom she'avar v'lo yishlim bo nafsho v'yarad mimadregato, right? Person was tamei. A day has passed, but he hasn't finished becoming pure. Vihine k'sheshav b'tshuva. When a person comes back to do tshuva, yesh b'tshuvato shtei madregot. There are two levels, two stages to doing tshuva. Remember we said lashuv is to go back, to become the person you always wanted to be. Hamalira achat, the first stage, shemetaken ha-kilkul v'chozer l'matzav shleimut k'mo she'a kodem chetov. It's the person who fixes. He made a mess of things. He messed up. Did a chet. He fixed himself and he becomes whole, like he was before the chet. Right? You know, a person let himself go, gained 100 pounds. He's 300 pounds, he should be 200 pounds. So the higher level of tshuva is you get back to where you're supposed to be. right? You're now back to being your weights, and you got there. You did tshuva. You got back to where you're going to be, right? That's what it means. V'afilu lo ala adayin l'madrega she'alu kodem cheto, right? However, even if he hasn't yet gotten back to the stage that he was at, right, before he made his mistake, mikol makom, kevan shekvar yatz'am mirish'o, iofshar lomar al oto hayom she'in bo tara. Let's say that a person wants to lose weight. I'm just using that as an easy example. You can pick an example. And you realize you're 300 pounds. And you have a karas achet, right? The first stage of tshuva. You're making a mistake. And it finally bothers you enough, you're going to do something bad. You decide you're going to do something bad. And that day, you have vegetables for lunch instead of potato chips. And that night, you have a burger, but you don't eat the bun and you don't eat the fries. And afterwards, you get on the treadmill. And the next morning, you weigh yourself and you lost a pound. You're 299. Now, let's be honest here. Nobody else notices a difference. You're still 299 pounds. Don't have a big party yet. Like, you're still, you know, you got a lot of work to do. I didn't say it. I thought it, but I didn't say it. Nothing's really changed yet. Says Rav Kook, that's not true. That's not true at all. You know what changed? You're headed back in the right direction. Everything changed. You're no longer getting heavier. You're getting lighter. You turned your life around. You're not there yet. You got a long way to go until you can go into the Beis Hamikdash, till you get back to where you were. But something changed. You turned it around. We're in the middle of this Masa. We're still in the middle of the Masa. We're still in the mountains. We're still in the dark. We're still sweating. We're still dying. But something turned around. We're no longer heading down into despair. We're heading up the mountain towards glory. It's an unbelievable feeling. Nobody else knows that you've changed, but you know. You lost a pound. You did something. You changed. You turned it all around. And that has tahara. You're not there yet. But such a day where you immersed in a mikveh, you decided you wanted to become pure, that changed everything. That changed everything. Says Moshe Rabbeinu, right, it's important to understand that the exact point of midnight is critical. Because this side of midnight, I'm closer to the day before, and that side of midnight, I've turned it around. I'm heading towards the light. The astrologers may not notice. So we're going to call it kachatzor because they don't get this. But Hashem says it's important in the Torah that you know that there's a difference. So I want to tell you something. This night, in this place, we had one night, late night in the base. It's 1 pound. If it's just this night, you jumped in a mikveh, you never got to the Beis Hamikdash. Or something changed. And we changed direction. We turned something around. We went to Poland. We went to Akko. We went to Atlit. We saw things. We started to think, we're blessed. I mean, we're truly blessed. Look where we are. Look what we get to do. You sit in your makom, and they bring you a hamburger. Think about this. Never mind Auschwitz, Treblinka, and Belzec. Do you know what a Jew in Atlit, in a refugee camp, after he was a Holocaust survivor, and he's put in a place that reminds you of the camps? What he would have felt like if they brought him a hamburger and a bun, and then they said, there's vegetables in the back. Can you imagine? Do we get it? Do we appreciate it? Do we turn it around? Do we discover yeshiva? This is where the magic is. You know, the beginning of the Masa, that's morning Seder. Getting deeper into night's afternoon Seder, night Seder. But late night in the base, that's when you turn it around. That's when the magic is. An hour of late night in the base worth 3 hours the rest of the day. Guaranteed. I've been here now, this is my 14th year. Guaranteed. You get to decide if this is a moment or if this lasts. Do you understand? We saw some of us, the Warsaw Ghetto. It is impossible to imagine how dark a night they were in. It's the summer of 1943. They've taken 450,000 Jews from Warsaw, 350,000 Jews to Treblinka, 900,000 Yidden murdered in 9 months. They took them on trains. They took them off the trains. It took them less than an hour. They robbed them. They stripped them. They shave them, they gas them, and they burn them, all in an hour. We were in Treblinka longer than they were. You can't imagine such a dark night. And 60,000 Jews finally say enough is enough. And 300 of them, maybe, there's estimates, debates, decide something has to change. And they made Molotov cocktails, and they smuggled in a few guns. And they took on what ended up being a force that was about 28 times their size, with tanks and artillery and flamethrowers. And what did they have? And you look at that and you say, nothing changed. They burned down the ghetto. They caught almost all of them. They shipped them off to Treblinka. There's still night. The world says nothing changed. But they knew something changed. They turned something around. And that's what you got to decide in your life. You got to celebrate moments where you succeed in turning things around. That's why this is the Parsha of Geula. When do we experience that night? There's still slaves in Egypt. But they took the god of the Egyptians and they slaughtered it. They took the blood of the god of the Egyptians and they painted it on their door. They said, into this house, Egyptian idolatry is no longer welcome. They're still sitting in slavery. But they turn everything around. And that's the challenge of Parshat Bo. And we get to decide, where do we fit in that spectrum?